management in making so surprising a figure on so moderate a fortune. Several ladies that have twice her fortune are not able to be always so genteel and so constant at all places of pleasure and expense. She has everything that is in the fashion and is in every place where there is any diversion. Flavia is very orthodox. She talks warningly against heretics and schismatics, is generally at church and often at the sacrament. Once she commended a sermon that was against the pride and vanity of dress, and thought it was very just against Lucinda, whom she takes to be a great deal finer than she need to be. If anyone asks Flavia to do something in charity, if she likes the person who makes the proposal or happens to be in a right temper, she will toss him half a crown, or a crown, and tell him if he knew what a long milliner's bill she had just received, he would think it a great deal for her to give. A quarter of a year after this, she hears a sermon upon the necessity of charity. She thinks the man preaches well, that it is a very proper subject, that people want much to be put in mind of it. But she applies nothing to herself, because she remembers that she gave a crown some time ago when she could so ill spare it. As for poor people themselves, she will admit of no complaints from them. She is very positive they are all cheats and liars, and will say anything to get relief, and therefore it must be a sin to encourage them in their evil ways. You would think Flavia had the tenderest conscience in the world if you were to see how scrupulous and apprehensive she is of the guilt and danger of giving amiss. She buys all books of wit and humor and has made an expensive collection of all our English poets. For she says, one cannot have a true taste of any of them without being very conversant with them all. She will sometimes read a book of piety, if it is a short one, if it is much commended for style and language, and she can tell where to borrow it. Flavia is very idle and yet very fond of fine work. This makes her often sit working in bed until noon, and be told many a long story before she is up, so that I need not tell you that her morning devotions are not always rightly performed. Flavia would be a miracle of piety if she was but half so careful of her soul as she is of her body. The rising of a pimple in her face, the sting of a gnat, will make her keep her room 2 or 3 days, and she thinks they are very rash people that do not take care of things in time. This makes her so over-careful of her health that she never thinks she is well enough, and so over-indulgent that she never can be really well, so that it costs her a great deal in sleeping draughts and waking draughts, in spirits for the head, in drops for the nerves, in cordials for the stomach, and in saffron for her tea. If you visit Flavia on a Sunday, you will always meet good company. You will know what is doing in the world. You will hear the last lampoon, be told who wrote it, and who it is meant by every name that is in it. You will hear what plays were acted that week, which is the finest song in the opera, who was intolerable at the last assembly, and what games are most in fashion. Flavia thinks they are atheists that play at cards on the Sunday, but she will tell you the nicety of all the games, what cards she held, how she played them, and the history of all that happened at play, as soon as she comes from church. If you would know who is rude and ill-natured, who is vain and foppish, who lives too high and who is in debt, if you would know what is the quarrel at a certain house, or who are in love, if you would know how late Belinda comes home at night, what clothes she has bought, how she loves compliments, and what a long story she told at such a place. If you would know how cross Lucius is to his wife, what ill-natured things he says to her when nobody hears him. If you would know how they hate one another in their hearts, though they appear so kind in public, you must visit Flavia on the Sunday. But still she has so great a regard for the holiness of the Sunday that she has turned a poor old widow out of her house as a profane wretch for having been found once mending her clothes on the Sunday night. Thus lives Flavia, and if she lives 10 years longer, she will have spent about 1,560 Sundays after this manner. She will have worn about 200 different suits of clothes. Out of these 30 years of her life, 15 will have been disposed of in bed, and of the remaining 15, about 14 will have been consumed in eating, drinking, dressing, visiting, conversation, reading, and hearing plays and romances at operas, assemblies, balls, and diversions. If you may reckon all the time that she is up, thus spent, except about an hour and a half that is disposed of at church most Sundays in the year. With great management and under mighty rules of economy, she will have spent 1,600 pounds upon herself, batting only some shillings, crowns, or half-crowns that have gone from her in accidental charities. I shall not take upon me to say that it is impossible for Flavia to be saved, but thus much must be said, that she has no grounds from Scripture to think she is in the way of salvation, for her whole life is in direct opposition to all those tempers and practices which the gospel has made necessary to salvation. If you were to hear her say that she had lived all her life like Anna the prophetess, who departed not from the temple, but served God with fastings and prayers night and day, Luke 2:36-37, you would look upon her as very extravagant, and yet this would be no greater an extravagance than for her to say that she had been striving to enter in at the straight gate, Luke 8:24, or making any one doctrine of the gospel a rule of her life. She may as well say that she lived with our Savior when he was upon earth, as that she has lived in imitation of him, or made it any part of her care to live in such tempers as he required by all those that would be his disciples. She may as truly say that she has every day washed the saints' feet, as that she has lived in Christian humility and poverty of spirit, and as reasonably think that she has taught a charity school, as that she has lived in works of charity. She has as much reason to think that she has been a sentinel in an army as that she has lived in watching and self-denial. And it may as fairly be said that she lived by the labor of her hands as that she had given all diligence to make her calling and election sure. And here it is to be well observed that the poor, vain turn of mind, the irreligion, the folly and vanity of this whole life of Flavia is all owing to the manner of using her estate. It is this that has formed her spirit, that has given life to every idle temper, that has supported every trifling passion, and kept her from all thoughts of a prudent, useful, and devout life. When her parents died, she had no thought about her 200 pounds a year, but that she had so much money to do what she would with, to spend upon herself, and purchase the pleasures and gratifications of all her passions. And it is this setting out, this false judgment and indiscreet use of her fortune, that has filled her whole life with the same indiscretion, and kept her from thinking of what is right and wise and pious in everything else. If you have seen her delighted in plays and romances, in scandal and backbiting, easily flattered and soon affronted, if you have seen her devoted to pleasures and diversions, a slave to every passion in its turn, nice in everything that concerned her body or dress, careless of everything that might benefit her soul, always wanting some new entertainment, and ready for every happy invention in show or dress, it was because she had purchased all these tempers with the yearly revenue of her fortune. She might have been humble, serious, devout, a lover of good books, an admirer of prayer and retirement, careful of her time, diligent in good works, full of charity and the love of God, but that the imprudent use of her estate forced all the contrary tempers upon her, and it was no wonder that she should turn her time, her mind, her health, and strength to the same uses that she turned her fortune. It is owing to her being wrong in so great an article of life that you can see nothing wise or reasonable or pious in any other part of it. Now, though the irregular trifling spirit of this character belongs, I hope, but to few people, yet many may here learn some instruction from it, and perhaps see something of their own spirit in it. For as Flavia seems to be undone by the unreasonable use of her fortune, so the lowness of most people's virtue, the imperfections of their piety, and the disorders of their passions are generally owing to their imprudent use and enjoyment of lawful and innocent things. More people are kept from a true sense and taste of religion by a regular kind of sensuality and indulgence than by gross drunkenness. More men live regardless of the great duties of piety through too great a concern for worldly goods than through direct injustice. This man would perhaps be devout if he was not so great a virtuoso. Another is deaf to all the motives of piety by indulging an idle, slothful temper. Could you cure this man of his great curiosity and inquisitive temper, or that of his false satisfaction and thirst after learning, you need do no more to make them both become men of great piety. If this woman would make fewer visits, or that not be always talking, they would neither of them find it half so hard to be affected with religion. For all these things are only little when they are compared to great sins, and though they are little in that respect, yet they are great, as they are impediments and hindrances to a pious spirit. For as consideration is the only eye of the soul, as the truths of religion can be seen by nothing else, so whatever raises a levity of mind, a trifling spirit, renders the soul incapable of seeing, apprehending, and relishing the doctrines of piety. Would we therefore make a real progress in religion, we must not only abhor gross and notorious sins, but we must regulate the innocent and lawful parts of our behavior and put the most common and allowed actions of life under the rules of discretion and piety. Chapter 8. How the wise and pious use of an estate naturally carrieth us to great perfection in all the virtues of the Christian life, represented in the character of Miranda. Any one pious regularity of any one part of our life is of great advantage, not only on its own account, but as it uses us to live by rule and think of the government of ourselves. A man of business that has brought one part of his affairs under certain rules is in a fair way to take the same care of the rest. So he that has brought any one part of his life under the rules of religion may thence be taught to extend the same order and regularity into other parts of his life. If any one is so wise as to think his time too precious to be disposed of by chance, and left to be devoured by anything that happens in his way, if he lays himself under a necessity of observing how every day goes through his hands and obliges himself to a certain order of time in his business, his retirements and devotions, it is hardly to be imagined how soon such a conduct would reform, improve, and perfect the whole course of his life. He that once thus knows the value and reaps the advantage of the well-ordered time will not long be a stranger to the value of anything else that is of any real concern to him. A rule that relates even to the smallest part of our life is of great benefit to us, merely as it is a rule. For as the proverb saith, he that has begun well has half done. So he that has begun to live by rule has gone a great way toward the perfection of his life. By rule must here be constantly understood a religious rule observed upon a principle of duty to God. For if a man should indulge himself to be moderate in his meals only in regard to his stomach, or abstain from drinking, only to avoid the heartache, or be moderate in his sleep through fear of lethargy, he might be exact in these rules without being at all the better man for them. But when he is moderate and regular in any of these things, out of a sense of Christian sobriety and self-denial, that he may offer unto God a more reasonable and holy life, then it is that the smallest rule of his kind is naturally the beginning of great piety. For the smallest rule in these matters is of great benefit, as it teaches us some part of the government of ourselves, as it keeps up a tenderness of mind, as it presents God often to our thoughts, and brings a sense of religion into the ordinary actions of our common life. If a man, whenever he was in company, where anyone swore, talked lewdly, or spoke evil of his neighbor, should make it a rule to himself, either gently to reprove him, or if that was not proper, then to leave the company as decently as he could, he would find that this little rule, like a little leaven hid in a great quantity of meal, would spread and extend itself through the whole form of his life. If another should oblige himself to abstain on the Lord's Day from any innocent and lawful things, as traveling, visiting, common conversation, and discoursing upon worldly matters, as trade, news, and the like, if he should devote the day, besides the public worship, to greater retirement, reading, devotion, instruction, and works of charity, though it may seem but a small thing or a needless nicety to require a man to abstain from such things as may be done without sin, yet whoever would try the benefit of so little a rule would perhaps thereby find such a change made in his spirit and such a taste of piety raised in his mind as he was an entire stranger to before. It would be easy to show in many other instances how little and small matters are the first steps and natural beginnings of great perfection. But the two things which, of all others, most want to be under a strict rule, and which are the greatest blessings both to ourselves and others, when they are rightly used, are our time and our money. These talents are continual means and opportunities of doing good. He that is piously strict and exact in the wise management of either of these cannot be long ignorant of the right use of the other. And he that is happy in the religious care and disposal of them both is already ascended several steps upon the ladder of Christian perfection. Miranda, admirable, supposed to be a portrait of Miss Hester Gibbon, the sister of Flavia, is a sober, reasonable Christian. As soon as she was mistress of her time and fortune, it was her first thought how she might best fulfill everything that God required of her in the use of them, and how she might make the best and happiest use of this short life. She depends upon the truth of what our blessed Lord hath said, that there is but one thing needful, Luke 11:42, and therefore makes her whole life but one continual labor after it. She has but one reason for doing or not doing, for liking or not liking anything, and that is the will of God. She is not so weak as to pretend to add what is called the fine lady to the true Christian. Miranda thinks too well to be taken with the sound of such silly words. She has renounced the world to follow Christ in the exercise of humility, charity, devotion, abstinence, and heavenly affections, and that is Miranda's fine breeding. While she was under her mother, she was forced to be genteel, to live in ceremony, to sit up late at nights, to be in the folly of every fashion, and always visiting on Sundays, to go patched and loaded with a burden of finery to the Holy Sacrament, to be in every polite conversation, to hear profaneness at the playhouse, and wanton songs and love intrigues at the opera, to dance at public